Well, hello, friends. Good morning. Welcome. It is 15 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Tuesday morning. It's the 22nd of June. We're thrilled that you are with us. We have a great panel this morning, so we will get started. We always welcome you to join us. It's simple to do. All you have to do is write to us, panel at WAMC.org. That is our email address, panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the group to you. We'll get started. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Well,
Okay. Excellent. I'll take that as a full answer. Michael Spain, how are you?
I am just fine, Joe.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's good to see you, as always. Michael is, of course, the former Times Union Associate Editor and has been with us since the inception of this program, and we are very, very happy to have him, as always.
He's tied for the nicest person that we all know.
And I'm next to him right here.
That's right, you are.
They haven't known me as long.
And it ain't me.
Oh, I was going to interview. I was going to introduce Rosemary next. Oh, no, JP must be next.
She's very nice also.
It's the Empire Reports. JP Miller, good morning, JP. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to have you. And joining us via the art of telephone, it's investigative journalist and New Albany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Rosemary, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Not the nicest person in the world, but good.
You're fine.
You're pretty nice.
All right. So let's get started. We'll prove everyone's case of whether they're nice or not over the next hour and 50 minutes. And we welcome you to join us. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let's go to voting rights and the legislation battle that is taking place. Activists gear up for battle as Senate Republicans prepare to block voting rights bill. Liberal activists and Democratic lawmakers are angling to use a planned Senate vote Tuesday on broad legislation to overhaul election access, campaign finance, and government ethics, which is expected to fail because of solid Republican opposition, as an inflection point in a major last-ditch push to change Senate rules and pass voting rights legislation before the end of the summer. Advocates of federal intervention who have been spurred to action by the raft of new, more restrictive state voting laws passed by Republican legislatures face a steep uphill battle after Tuesday's vote. No GOP senators are expected to vote to even begin debating legislation, and several Democratic senators have made it clear that they oppose a move that could allow further action, eliminating the 60-vote supermajority rule known as the filibuster. But top party leaders are betting that a show of firm GOP intransigence in Tuesday afternoon's procedural vote will prompt movement among the handful of wary Democrats. In a fiery floor speech Monday that served in part as a veiled appeal to members of his own caucus, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer hammered the point that Republicans were threatening to block even a discussion of voting rights. Alan?
So what's new? I mean, we have seen the party of no right along. We know that each of them in the Senate particularly understand that Trump is out there. One lifted finger from him with bad words about that person or good words about a primary opponent is the end. And so we see it, and it extends far down the ranks of the Republican Party, not to change the subject, Joe, which, of course, I am loath to do. But even here in New York State, you got this loser Zeldin, who is going to run for governor.
Lee Zeldin.
And why him? Why not somebody like our old friend Chris Gibson or one of those people who's a Republican who can do so well, a Republican? What happens is they're all scared to death of Trump and of the Trumpers. And so the party itself is unified behind whoever or whatever, but not the American people, which just have Trump in the basement and have Biden doing extremely well, and sometimes not even doing that well, but they have him that way. So the American people are there. Trump has robbed the party, and when it comes down to the way in which we organize our elections, are you kidding? This means that we can take away people's voting rights from them, and we can diminish their power to vote. It is really as bad as it gets.
So when it comes down to the Republican, or excuse me, when it comes down to, Mike, the Democratic playbook here, I mean, do they expect this to be a successful strategy? It seems kind of like grasping at straws.
Well, the difference between now with Schumer as the Senate Majority Leader than when Mitch McConnell was the leader of the Senate is that he can call a vote. McConnell would simply not even let a bill come to the floor, and therefore no Republican members of the Senate had to commit and say publicly how they would have voted. But by having a roll call vote on even a conversation, a discussion about the voter rights bill, is going to expose who's in favor of at least talking about preserving a sacred right, a foundation of democracy, your right to vote. And now that's a calculation the Democrats are making by forcing, exposure of the Republicans who don't want to even talk about a bill, let alone vote in favor of it. But for McConnell, it's all 18 months from now, less than 18 months from now, the midterm elections. If he can squash this by just holding firm, will people even remember it in 18 months? And it's all calculated. And then the other that Alan brought up, I thought was interesting, is how long can Trump continue to keep its hold on the party? When will that crack as more and more things come out about Trump? The books are already starting to come out. The criminal cases and the civil cases against his organization. It could be that in 18 months, Trump's hold on Republicans is not nearly what it is now, and it could be a much different situation. So it's all betting on what strategy will work 18 months from now.
That's such a good point, Mike. Yeah. There was a poll that showed DeSantis beating Trump in a potential primary. I don't believe a word of it, but it was there.
Well, would DeSantis even have the guts to take on Trump in
a
primary?
No. The answer is no.
Yeah, I mean, so Trump would have to bless him and give him his okay.
And do we want that?
Yeah, I know. Trump.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Florida governor is our next president. Wonderful idea.
All right. Rosemary.
Well, no, we definitely don't want DeSantis. That could be worse. But what's missing from the discussion is that I don't think this is about Trump so much as about the future of the Republican Party. And Trump or no, whether his influence abates or not, his ideas still are extremely strong in the country, at the state level especially, but also at the national level. And so I think that Mike is absolutely right about the strategies being employed by the two parties. I would simply add that the Republicans have the better strategy, which is holding off things. We want a midterm election, which takes control, and then it can move forward again. Consumers' best bet, or the only option you've shown us, is that he'll expose the Republicans. Hell, what more can they be exposed to? This is like waiting for Trump to do one last thing that'll make everyone turn on him. No one's going to turn on them. They like what their representatives are. This is the voter's choice. And horrible as that is for me to contemplate, and I think that my fellow Americans support and go along with this, I have to admit that you're putting these guys in office and approving what they're doing. So I think Schumer is playing and he thinks that Manchin will see that the Republicans really are not going to do the right thing, and so he'll change his mind. Did you see the editorial that Senator, how do you say her name, the one from Arizona?
Cinnamon.
That she put in the paper this past week, which is that under no circumstances will she change the filibuster. Under no circumstances. So even if all the Republicans put their name on this saying, yeah, we don't even want to talk about voter reform, you really think she's going to change her mind because they've been exposed? I just don't see that this is a winning strategy.
All right, JP, you're up.
On the voting rights bill, I thought it was interesting that yesterday Senator Manchin declined to commit to advancing the Democrats' election bill. I believe he put forward his own bill, which former President Obama came out and said that he supports the Manchin compromise. And so They then asked Bernie Sanders, well, would you support the Manchin Compromise, which Bernie declined to say that he would support the Manchin Compromise. So I'm not sure, you know, before getting the Republicans to go along, you at least have to get the Democrats in the Senate to go along with it. And I wonder, you know, what is President Biden's number one priority right now? Is it the infrastructure bill or is it voting rights? And on this voting rights bill, you also have to kind of think, who's driving the bus in the voting rights bill? Is it Chuck Schumer? Is he running lead on this? Is it the White House? Is it Joe Manchin? And so to kind of critique their strategy on bringing this up for a vote is for me hard, because I don't see how they benefit from bringing it up from a vote today, which it doesn't look like it's going to be successful.
You know that Manchin was conducting a strategy, and his strategy was, I'm going to say no to the Democrats, and then when it gets real close and when they really need me, I'm going to say, okay, I have a compromise that the Republicans will go for. The premise was that the Republicans would go for it. Nothing doing.
No, they're not going to play with anybody, are they?
No.
And so now let's just go to the issue of what this means for voting rights in this country. I mean, I think we're all in agreement that this eventually will go to the courts, right? But we still have a long way between now and then. And this what we're looking at is pretty scary.
Well, it can affect the outcome of the midterm elections, obviously. If they say 15% of all eligible voters are now constricted by these bills that 18 different states have put in and other states are considering, I mean, that's enough to shift the results of elections. And just making it a little more difficult, a little more inconvenient for people to vote. Like in some states, a couple of states, in order to keep your mail-in option, you have to provide an ID. So it means in order to mail something in, you have to physically go somewhere and sign up for it ahead of time. I mean, it kind of subtracts the whole value of being able to do mail-in voting. And then if people don't get out on election day because it rains or something comes up, they're disenfranchised. It's just an example of all the little obstacles they're putting in people's way, and it will have an impact on elections.
The only question, of course, is to what degree will this obstructionism on the part of the Republicans create a counterwave on the part of the Democrats? We don't know, but we have seen in the past when people are roused and when they get angry enough that things can happen.
I've thought about that question, and through the view of this is what the White House and the Democrats in the Senate are choosing to focus on right now. Will that affect voters? I think usually when you poll voters, what's the most important issue to you? It's the economy, it's health care, it's crime. Where does voting rights fall on that spectrum of how they will
one
will
step vote? Away too many?
Yeah, so.
All right. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, I was just going to say, if people are conditioned to believe that their sacred right to vote is being stolen from them, and that's the way the Democrats are portraying this, it could anger them and they could come out. But I think that's that's a long game. It's a tough risk to take, especially it probably would be more beneficial for the Democrats if they passed a bipartisan infrastructure bill that was beginning to have impact all across the country.
That's a big if.
Yeah, a big if. Right, I know. But I mean, they're spending a lot of political capital on the voting rights bill. They spent an awful lot of political capital on Obamacare back in 2009, and then they didn't get anything else done. They got that through barely, and then they didn't get anything else done. So how they spend that capital can make or break them in 2022, the midterm elections.
More on this discussion coming up. We'll continue with our panel this morning, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, and Mike Spain. All you have to do to weigh in on the topic is write to us, panel@wamc.org. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, and Mike Spain on the program this morning. And it's great to have you with us as well. We can prove you're with us because I'm going to read some letters. Janice says, if 41 senators represent 21% of the population, how is it that they rule? That is not democracy.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't do the math. It'll just make you angry. Let's see. Michael says the best way to have somebody do something is to tell them they can't. I think this applies to these state legislatures.
Could be.
And that could well be. Yeah.
We can only hope.
Anything on that, Rosemary? Okay. Hearing nothing, I'll say no. We go to Diane. I do not understand some of the laws of the Senate, but if the Dems don't cooperate today, can Biden get it done on his own with reconciliation?
Well, the filibuster, only the only exceptions to the filibuster, as I think, Dr. Chartok, are the selection of federal judges and budget bills. So, yeah. So voting rights would not fall into that category. They could carve out some more exceptions, like voting rights, which some are saying could be the ultimate path here. But right now, with Catherine Semina from Arizona and Manchin's own hesitation about touching filibuster, which I don't really understand. It's like the filibuster's only been around for a little while. It began as a tool to stop civil rights legislation, you know, in the 50s and 60s. And the way it is now has only been around for like 15 years. You know,
oh, right? Mike, you're so rational.
But people think it's like in the Constitution. It's in the Declaration of Independence, and you got to have a filibuster. The previous writer about how 41 senators can represent only a minority of citizens in this country and basically call all the shots just seems that should anger people and they should come out and try to.
You know, go ahead, Rosemary.
Go ahead, Rosemary.
But that is in the Constitution that those senators get to represent far fewer people than the senators from blue states.
True. That part is, not the filibuster.
Oh, you get angry about it, but it won't do you any good at all.
Well, the 41 senators would not control things if not for the filibuster. The filibuster is a relatively new tool. If it was simply a majority, the Democrats, with the vice president as president of the Senate, would still control things with 51 votes. But that's not the case because of the filibuster, not because of the Constitution.
You know,
this. Everything you say shows how much the Republicans have gamed the system. They figured out the rules far ahead of Democrats and played it to their advantage, and they continue to do that.
We go to, I just want to note that the Senate is expected to vote at 5:30 today. So for those of you keeping track of such things, and I look at JP because I know.
And you want to see the Democrats lose.
The Democrats, the Senate is expected to vote at 5:30 to reject the Democrats' expansive elections and voting rights bill, which could prompt new discussion about the filibuster. At the same time, Senator Manchin has his own voting bill proposal, and a bipartisan group of senators has another. So we'll be obviously watching that, and the White House says that Democrats might revisit filibuster rules if the voting rights bill fails. So a lot to watch out for there. Stephen says, Trump's hold is on a small percentage of the American people, bully types that perceive themselves as being left behind and are in a rage. Mm. They now have a hold on the party, the legacy of negative campaigning.
Mm-hmm.
Carol says, what does the panel think about lowering the filibuster threshold to 55 votes?
That's one of the proposals on the table, right? I mean, there have been discussions about altering it, and that would be one.
And why would Mitch McConnell go along with that?
Right. They'd have to remove the filibuster to change the filibuster and then go back into a lesser filibuster, I guess.
My view on the filibuster is it's not really a filibuster anymore. They can now derail legislation with a simple threat of a filibuster without getting up there and filibustering. And filibustering is something that's painful and laborious. And my view is that if they want a filibuster, they should have to filibuster and not just threaten to filibuster.
As I have said all along, JP, you know, should schmud, they should. But we get letters every day, they should change this, it should be 5, not 10. But Mitch McConnell ain't doing any of that.
But that is actually a proposal that Joe Manchin supports or has said that he has some feeling for, that he would go back to the original rules. That would require Republicans to have at least 41 senators on the floor at all times, a virtual impossibility. So it's more than just woulda, shoulda. That actually, with support from all Democrats, could get through.
Wait. So are you saying that you, Rosemary, are you saying that you think that they'll do that?
I have the most hope for that of anything, Alan, that Manchin, whose bill is also being dipped today, is going to say, okay, well, I've said before I would go back to the original filibuster rules. This is after filibuster. This is JP says now they just notified the body that they have votes against it, and that's the end of things. You don't have to do the work. And Manchin has said he would support going back to the original rules, which you get up and you talk the whole time, the Jimmy Stewart filibuster. He has said he would go back to it. So if he goes along, Arizona senator might go along, and then you actually would have the votes to make a rule change.
We shall see. Mike says if only one thing is accomplished this term, it has to be voting rights. If that is lost, all is lost. We are very near the end of democracy. The Republican Party has shown that they have no moral bottom because of how low they are willing to sink. The Democrats must fix just the very worst of what they will do.
That's a very good letter, except for the last sentence. They must fix it. How do they fix it? I mean, we see that every time somebody comes up with an intelligent way of dealing with it, whether it's the Rosemary way, which you just talked about, or which, whether it's any of the individual senators, if you haven't got the votes, you can't do it.
I don't think there are the votes to do it in the Congress right now. But it's not as if it's bad, don't get me wrong, but it's not a lost cause at the state level, at many individual state levels. These restrictions are so onerous, so blatantly discriminatory and awful that there should be a reaction, that there's a grassroots reaction, and you get out the vote despite the fact that you have to go present an ID, that you have to jump through hoops to do your vote. Don't forget, we have done this before. There's civil rights legislation now at a time when that Congress is solidly racist, and it was done when there were all kinds of blocks, including poll taxes. And
Rosemary, I'm hearing about every third word. The cell phone isn't working out too well. I don't know if you have an option, but if we could look at that, that would be great.
I'm sorry.
Although every third word is good, I just can't. I don't know what's filling it in. That's all.
I just wanted to state something that we should all keep our eye on when we talk about electoral results. 73 million Americans voted for Donald Trump, and disproportionately from the red states. So getting the red states to change their minds about, you know, the kind of racism and stuff that we have seen from them is, I think, at least temporarily not going to happen.
We go to this letter from R. Jeremy. If you Google H.R. 1 for the People's Act and scan through the hundreds of pages, it immediately is understandable why it never had a chance. All say together now, overreach.
Well, there is some discussion about another strategy that Schumer is considering, and that is to break it up into individual bills. Each bill, you know, one that would guarantee mail-in voting 2 weeks before, one that would require that you need a voter ID, which is what a lot of Republicans like, one that would protect people who can't get to the polls somehow, you know, different kinds of bills that would or prohibit states from firing election commissioners. You know, if you broke it all up that way and had everybody vote on each individual bill, the most reasonable bills, if they didn't pass, it might really sully the Republican image. Not that it needs it.
But, yeah. My as I've said too many times, Mike Schmidt. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, you can say that maybe it would, but you know, the guy sitting up there who was once president of the United States, who they live in fear of, isn't going to permit them, and I mean that, permit them to vote for any of them, Mike.
Hmm. Well. He might not.
All right. We get taken to task by Jake. You guys don't explain this topic very well. What rights is anybody losing compared to two election cycles ago? A lot of states changed the laws temporarily last election because of COVID. A lot of the laws they're talking about are changing or just walking back those mail-in voter laws. What's wrong with providing an ID to vote? You have to register to vote in the first place. So it's a big deal if you have to register to vote by mail to thwart fraud. Talk about sacrificial rights.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Is any better?
Yes. You hear sound?
I think that reader is saying what I was trying to, that it's not the end of the world if the Republicans win this round and Democrats have to hold on. They can still win elections. And outrage on the Democratic side about laws that make voting harder should bring out more of a crowd if Democrats play this right. And they would then win a majority or a bit more of a majority than they have now. So I don't think all is lost. I think this is a ploy by the Republicans to keep power. And we have been in worse straits in this country. We have civil rights legislation now, despite a very discriminatory and racist institutions in the 60s, 50s and 60s, that even impose taxes to vote, which is indeed much more onerous than having to vote in person or to present an ID card.
The ID card is one part of it, but also, I mean, changing early voting, changing the times, eliminating Sunday voting. I mean, there are things that certainly have a drastic effect on how people vote.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And don't forget, that Lyndon Johnson was a powerful force in this country. And when he said, "We shall overcome," in the same way that, Lyndon Johnson took no prisoners, in the same way Trump takes no prisoners, there were a lot of people who went along with it because they understood basic 101 of politics.
Rosemary, you were going to say, and then we'll go take a break.
Well, again, though, as the listener wrote in, it's bad that they want to hold back on what the rights that we have come to have. But we've done it before. Democrats won under the old rules. Republicans have done really nothing more, bad as it is, than go back to the old rules. And so you can still live with that.
It's true.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have more letters. I'll get to those, and we'll move on to other topics as well. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain. It's the Roundtable Panel on this Tuesday morning, the 22nd of June. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have letters, so we'll go to them. And we begin with Laura. Voting should not be only for the physically fit, young, and healthy that don't live in rural areas. Could we create a movement of collecting the signatures of people who need to vote remotely, insisting on voting rights? Would submitting such a document to Congress be effective? It would involve volunteers willing to do house calls throughout the country. Well, I think they know the problems. They just don't want to address them, right?
Wood schmud.
All right. Wood schmud. Greg, with two G's, I'm a 40-year registered Republican who hasn't voted for a Republican in a national election in 25 years and probably never will again. I say unto you, hundreds of thousands of us should be standing in front of the Capitol supporting this voting rights bill right now. That's how you get it done. Hmm. I'll drive, says Greg.
It wouldn't hurt, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
My favorite line in his letter, unto you.
Yes.
Very biblical.
I say unto you. We go to Aaron. I'm so tired of hearing about this fake anger over how many people certain senators represent. That is not how the Senate works. Population density has nothing to do with how many senators a state gets. Each state gets to, if you're looking for a House of Representatives that is tied to population, look no further than the House of Representatives.
Well, that was Rosemary's point, and I agree. They set it up that way so small states can have a lot of power as opposed to, against the big states.
And great compromise.
And this is the, right, and this is the result.
Rosemary, anything on that?
Well, what, of course, the founders worried about was that the more populous areas would shut out and overrule the minority. And so it was protection of the minority at the base of their structure, The problem is something they never anticipated, which is that the minority would run the show, which is what has happened to the modern day Republicans who, as I say, have learned to game the system, take advantage of every piece of that Constitution that was set up for a different purpose.
Rosemary, I was going to say fairness,
yeah. Another system would be great, but I foresee no possibility now or in the future of changing the Constitution. Either the Electoral College, which if you want to talk about unfairness and giving real strength to the minority, comes in the Electoral College, which keeps voting for the presidency outside of the popular the majority. You know, that's the worst. I don't see a change coming in that or in any kind of representation of the states, even something so far as giving statehood to D.C. or to Puerto Rico is affected by that. The Republicans know they have won it, and they're going to hold on to that. And if I were a Republican, I would be doing the same.
But you're not a Republican, right, for some reason?
Definitely not.
And you also have to look at, you know, the heartland of America being governed by, you know, people in the coasts and people in urban areas in many ways wouldn't work. And that's also shown in the upstate downstate divisions in New York. People in upstate New York have a different lifestyle, should have different values than people in New York City, and have different values and govern themselves in different ways. And that's, I think, obviously a big bedrock principle of our country and our democracy is local control over your destiny. And
what they don't have, JP, is votes. They don't have the votes they need. So the votes are now downstate. It used to be much more of a sort of split between upstate. So there was a local assemblyman, I don't remember from where, but I read it in the Empire State Report. And there was, you know, he's got the usual plan to divide New York up into three regions. So each of them would be somewhat state-like themselves and autonomous. And of course, it's nonsense. It ain't going to happen.
So what you're describing is tribalism. You go into tribes and then every little group gets represented and their values are spoken. And the founders, of course, had the opposite problem. They wanted to bring together these disjointed and unhappy friends that were the colonies. And so they give rights to the minority. You can understand the reason for it. But the result now, 200 years later, is that they have too much power. And I don't see a way to change that.
And an awful lot of evolution. So, for example, George Washington, as we know, warned against faction. In other words, political parties. And now political parties are the whole game. So you're right, Rosemary, but a lot of developments have occurred that were not anticipated by the guys who sat down to write the Constitution.
Right. We have a couple more letters I want to get to before our top of the hour break and news with Ray. Jill says the filibuster always seems to be something only the Senate Republicans use. Have the Democrats ever used the filibuster, for example? Why couldn't the Democrats use it to stop the Trump tax cuts?
Because that was a fiscal bill, a money bill, and that is one of the carved out areas. That's how the stimulus package, the most recent stimulus package that Biden brought in, got approved in spite of the filibuster. There's certain areas where the filibuster doesn't work, and that's one of the few, and the other is judges.
I keep thinking about Howdy Doody. Howdy Doody.
Yeah.
And I believe there was a character on Howdy Doody named Phil E. Buster.
Phineas T. Buster, I believe. I could be wrong, but I think that is it.
I think we've been over this
Howdy
time
Doody,
before.
A television show aimed at children circa 1955.
Buffalo Bob.
Right.
Yeah.
Clarabelle.
Sorry to pull us out of this nostalgic mood and get back to the listener's letter.
Thank you.
The Democrats did use the filibuster. That's how Harry Reid got measures passed. Mitch McConnell during the Obama years when he was being an obstructionist. But Democrats have paid a heavy price for it later because of their moral reasoning that, oh, we did it for the right reasons, and the Republicans are saying, hey, look how this works, and now they have taken it over, which is why Manchin and others are right to worry about eliminating it entirely.
I agree with you. I think that's exactly right. And if the Democrats lose both houses of Congress, but especially the Senate, will they be sorry?
I have to say, when I look at a picture of Phineas T. Bluster, he looks an awful lot like Mitch McConnell.
Mm.
No, look, I mean, seriously, look at that. Doesn't that look like Mitch McConnell?
It kind of does.
Looks exactly like McConnell.
For whatever it's worth, if Google it at home, you can find it. All right, let's go to Daniel, who says, it's amazing to me in this day and age that anyone could be opposed to voting rights. Senator Warnock's first speech as a senator was the most powerful oration I have heard in decades.
Boy, are they after him.
Yeah. Well, it could work, right?
Oh, yeah. Especially with their new rules that they keep passing.
Tom writes to us and says, are boards of election required to be bipartisan? Is voter suppression bipartisan? We talked a little bit about this last week.
We did.
Rosemary, any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I go back again, as I frequently do, to Republican messaging. It's we Democrats who are talking about voter suppression and onerous rules. The Republicans have talked consistently. McConnell, I heard him talk yesterday in the Senate about elections with integrity. What's so onerous about presenting an ID? Even some Democrats now, who said you were opposed to it for years and years, and now suddenly it's okay, so it couldn't have been that place. Their messaging is absolutely on target for what they want to do, which is voter suppression. They just don't call it that. Again, they're gaming the system. Democrats, when they try to rouse anger, they do, but only among Democrats, not among independents and among Republicans.
All right. We have one more letter, and then we're going to go to a break. This is from Mike, who says, so the filibuster gives the minority minority party undue influence. If the Republicans get back into power in the midterm elections, the first thing that they are going to do is do away with the filibuster.
I've heard that rationale, that the Republicans are going to do it anyway. And I don't know. They didn't do it while Trump was president, so why would they do it now? And I also think about 2022. If the Senate goes Republican, what happens when there is a Supreme Court vacancy? What kind of nominee is Joe Biden going to be able to put up to get it approved by that Senate in 2022?
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome you and your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning, friends. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. It's the 22nd of June, 6 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Let's get to some new topics and find out what is on your mind. We have a lot on your mind, I believe. I'll just throw in a couple of letters here on voter ID, and then we'll move away from that topic and find a new one. Teresa says, the difference between the voter ID in Manchin's bill and the red state's voter ID laws is that the red states disqualify many forms of ID, and it is meant to disenfranchise people, especially minorities and poor people. Manchin's bill allows many different types of ID.
And remembering, folks, that some of these plans mean you have to go get identified before the election. In other words, you have to say, I want to be qualified to do this, and that's one more onerous step.
Christine writes, saying that a voter ID is not a big deal is coming from a position of privilege. For several years, I've worked in a nonprofit assisting people applying for benefits, even with a dedicated case manager working through the red tape of obtaining a state-issued ID that would qualify.
Exactly.
It would often take weeks to accomplish, as well as money.
Exactly.
Republicans are aware of this, and they will use those requirements to suppress votes. Rosemary.
I dispute one thing in that letter. No one on the show said that it was not a bad thing to require ID.
No, I think a listener was. A listener wrote that. Yeah.
The idea, though, is that we have been in this position in the country before, and Democrats and people who were for civil rights overcame it. And we can do it again if we have to. It's the same argument that I make about abortion laws. I am not happy that the Supreme Court is about to throw out Roe v. Wade, and yet I know that it's very likely to happen, and I know that women can beat this as they did in the 60s when the laws were totally against women exercising reproductive freedom. It's the same thing with voter rights. It requires more work on the part of voters. It's not, fairness is not institutionalized, so there's no question that it's bad, but it is not a killer, hopeless situation.
Let's move to the story about the GOP and big cities. The Time, New York Times this morning writes about, when it comes to big city elections, Republicans are in the wilderness. The party's growing irrelevance in urban and suburban areas comes at a considerable cost, sidelining conservatives in centers of innovation and economic might. Across the political map this year, the diagnosis of the former of, this is from ultimately, I believe, Bernie Sanders. They have this whole preamble in this story about Jerry Sanders finished his second term as mayor of San Diego, and they're telling the story through his eyes. But in off-year elections from California to New York City and New Jersey and the increasingly blue state of Virginia with its critical suburbs of Washington, D.C., the Republican Party's appeal to this country's big cities and dense suburbs is on vivid display. Where the GOP once consistently mounted robust campaigns in many of these areas, the party is now all but locked out of all of the major contests of 2021. The realignment of national politics around urban versus rural divisions has seemingly doomed Republicans in these areas, as surely as it has all but eradicated the Democratic Party as a force across the plains in the upper Mountain West. At the national level, Republicans have largely accepted that trade-off as advantageous, since the structure of the federal government gives disproportionate power to sparsely populated rural states. So, Alan.
Yes.
What do you think?
I don't know. It does give disproportionate power to the people in the smaller states. I said that earlier in the program, and those are universally the red states. And I don't know how you deal with that, other than to fight the good fight in each of those states and turn the states around. And that isn't easy, but it can be done.
But aren't the, and big cities, they're always going to tend, right, Mike, to go to go Democratic?
I mean, mostly, but you know, you had Rudy Giuliani in New York City, and you had Bloomberg, who was technically a Republican when he was
George
elected.
You had George Pataki at the state level.
But I think what this story in the New York Times is suggesting is that that day is gone. I mean, the fact that you have a moderate, cross-endorsed Republican mayor in a major city is going to be a thing of the past.
You know, I don't know, Mike. I live, of course, in a wonderful state, Blue State, Massachusetts, where we elect Republican governors all the time. One of the reasons we do is that they are Republicrats, they're reasonable, instead of the kind of Lee Zeldin stuff that you see in New York State, where they elect a Trump, where they put up a Trumper knowing full well he has no chance, but they don't want to alienate Trump.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good point about the New York, Republican and Democrat fight in 2022 for governor. Here you have Andrew Cuomo, who's facing multiple investigations, an allegation of sexual assault and some other allegations of sexual harassment. Then you got the nursing homes, and you got the book that they say was written with, that is alleged that was written with his staff, not volunteer time, but. He still is raising money and still looks like he would smash someone like Lee Zeldin, the congressman from Long Island, who's very Trump-like. And yet a guy like Marcus Molinaro, the Dutchess County executive, or Rob Astorino, the former Westchester executive, are more moderate, more reasonable, more George Pataki-like, maybe a little more like the Rockefeller Republican. They really don't do well against Democrats, because Democrats have such an overwhelming majority in New York City.
Then how do you explain Blue State, Massachusetts?
I think you said it. I think that the only governors who are elected as Republicans in Massachusetts are moderates. They reach
That's
across
right.
the aisle.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
And this is looking primarily at cities and where all those where the Republicans have gone in the cities, and how. So the trade-off being, okay, we'll take the rural areas, we'll take the center of the country, and the cities, you can vote Democratic. Rosemary, thoughts?
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm having trouble with my mute button. I thought that the major point in that article, which is really interesting, I hope everyone will take a look at it, was that Republicans know that this is a good trade-off at the national level, that they have come out ahead because of the way the Constitution, as we've been talking about all morning, has set up Congress. But it also has given them an advantage in many legislatures. They control far more state houses than the Democrats do. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because the Democrats have given up. It's the same way that Elise Stefanik is in an area that, had there been a strong candidate, she might not have just rolled over for her second win, and yet they didn't even try. Maybe that's what's happening with the Republicans at the state level in New York. It's such a daunting task to beat a three-term, up-to-now popular governor that they're not even giving it a try. So what I took away from that article was that every race should be taken seriously. They're all up to grabs. That while the trend is clear, there are also plenty of exceptions. Alan's been talking about them in Massachusetts this morning. It's a lot more complicated to win an election now than it used to be, I think.
Rosemary, I'm sorry for scratching the itch, but I really want to know if you see anybody who can beat Andrew Cuomo.
No, I do not. And, you know, I'm horrified by the whole book stuff. I think he's nuts to have covered up and made such a mess of the nursing home numbers thing, which he could clearly easily have explained away at the time.
Absolutely.
It's just such a big faux pas. I think that there is corruption going on. I don't know about the sexual harassment stuff. That seems certainly, I'm glad it's being investigated. I don't know. But there's not a single person, Democrat or Republican, in this state that I see that can beat him or that I would prefer even to have in place of him.
The latest, I'm sorry, Joe, I don't want to hijack this, but the latest, of course, is this Joe Prococo stuff. And that is that this is the best friend of Mario and of Andrew, and he was a thief. That's all there is to it. And he, he was a thief. And now the family is out there, say, you know, raising money. And now when his sister, who I know, says Andrew didn't know a thing about it, there's a little credibility lapse there.
Well, you know, Alan, I'm glad you brought this up because when we first talked about it last week, I was really unsatisfied with our discussion because you said, oh, this is really big. And I said, wait, I don't get why is it really big? And it's because the connection was not made for me then. It looks like Prococo kept his mouth shut and did not implicate Cuomo and did not give the information to Pre-Parar that would have allowed an indictment. And now he's being paid off. He's getting the Cuomos are taking care of him and of his family. We've not made that connection. Is that what we are alleging?
That certainly is something I'm considering.
Interesting.
JP?
Back to the Republicans.
Oh, no, I want you
cities.
On this.
No.
Go ahead.
On the Republicans leaving the cities, I do think that COVID has exacerbated people's ability or willingness to be mobile and to move to other places. And I think that you're going to see, you know, if you're a young person that's a progressive that is growing up in the Midwest, I think you'll see them moving to places like San Francisco and Chicago and New York City like they have for decades. And I also think that you'll also continue to see more conservative-leaning people move out of places like San Francisco and New York and Chicago. But this was put for me in vivid detail at the beginning of the New York City mayor primary when there was a concerted effort. The high-powered, wealthy Republicans in New York City, the hedge fund folks and all them, their effort was not to draft a good candidate for mayor in New York City. Their effort was to write letters to all Republican voters and try to get them to switch their party ID to Democratic so that they could vote in the Democratic primary and hopefully nominate a more conservative Democrat than there would be otherwise.
Is that the Eric Adams?
Well, some are supporting Adams, some are supporting Yang, some are supporting Ray McGuire. But the idea that the most high-powered Republicans in the city are spending time and money registering Democrats, it shows how dominant the Democratic Party is in New York City.
Great point.
All right, let's go to just a couple of letters here, and we'll talk about... Well, Topher writes and says, Dutchess County politics should not be held up as an example of Republicrat success. The Republican Party in Dutchess County is just as Trumpist, racist, non-greater good thinking as the Republican Party in Long Island or Buffalo. Mark Molinaro is no George Pataki. Then we go to, I want to move on to the story about, you know, this is one of the things that sometimes you just assume there are issues and you wonder why people aren't talking about them. And then when they start talking about them, you think, oh, well, that's good. I wonder what brought it to our attention now. So and in this case, it's a new scientific analysis warning that the dangerous Delta variant of the coronavirus is spreading quickly in the U.S. and could hit areas in the country with lower vaccination rates hard, with experts extremely concerned about the fall, especially in areas in the South where you're looking at only 25% to 35% of the state populations who have been vaccinated. So this seems to be something that is obviously of great concern. I know we have hit 70% here in New York. Happy days are here again. Everything has opened up. We're all good. There are, back to our earlier point about the cities, which are obviously very blue, and consequently, vaccination rates are very high. There are very red places in this state and others in our listening area where the vaccination rates are woefully low. So that seems to be, or should be, of great concern. They're talking about the fall, as it was last year, with a fall when people started coming indoors, that the issue came especially with this Delta variant, which is, scientists say, is especially, what's the word I'm looking for?
Contagious.
Contagious,
highly
thank you.
Contagious.
Yeah, highly yeah. contagious.
Yeah.
Mike.
Yeah, that is disappointing. It does seem to fall along the lines we've been talking about. The red areas, you know, the voters who voted Republican and consistently do have the lower numbers. Places like Fulton County, New York, and Allegheny County, New York, you know, these rural counties have very low vaccination rates, and they're going to be vulnerable.
Why?
They're going to be vulnerable.
No, I know why they're going to be vulnerable. Oh. Why are we seeing the separation between red pockets?
Something I've heard you say many times. It's the very tragically and just unfortunate reality that vaccinations and the whole reaction to COVID-19 has become partisan. You believe that it's a serious illness if you're a Democrat, and you blow it off if you're a Republican. Now, that drastically overstates it. But there so many, when the commander-in-chief would say that it's nothing more than a cold and downplayed the virus for political reasons, it set a tone that people are skeptical that it's all that serious. And yet 600,000 or more people have died because of it. And people who do not get vaccinated are vulnerable, and they can spread it to younger people who can't be vaccinated. So it is a serious health threat that I don't know why Trump. I just don't understand it. Trump, it was on his watch that the vaccines were, the whole effort to find a COVID vaccine began. He could take credit for that, and he should urge people to get the vaccination. And yet, it's not. It's an opportunity lost. We have more vaccines available and than people want to use. And in other countries, people are dying all over the place because there's not enough vaccines. It's tragic.
So, Mike, do you think you could basically listen to the rhetoric of an individual who's, you know, who who may be talking to you from one of these red pockets, who might say something like, he's, you know, you might hear them say at some point, he's my president and I listen to him and, you know, that kind of thing. Do you think you could tell whether somebody is potentially more of an anti-vaxxer based on their political rhetoric than if they were more blue?
I think currently the people who are opposed, I think surveys have showed this, people who are more opposed to vaccinations now, not traditional anti-vax people. That's a movement that crossed a lot of political lines.
Yeah, it's
but
true.
Currently, the people who are most opposed to getting the vaccines do tend to be people who have voted in the past for, like, Trump. So, I mean, there's data to show that. Isn't that right, JP?
I would say that's a very reasonable thing to say. And I think the great news for most of us is that the vaccine is freely available and everybody can get it. And if people decide not to get the vaccine after 3 or 4 months of people proving that, you know, tens of millions of people have gotten it and it's safe and effective and they still don't want to get it and they get sick and die, it's kind of on them, right? We do, to a certain extent, live in a free country, right?
That's true to an extent. But those people who get this Delta variant might go near your children and might expose your children who can't have the vaccine, or my grandchildren, or all of our children. And I really resent the fact that their refusal to accept science is going to endanger a lot of people who are vulnerable. You know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
And by the way,
but what's going on? Work on vaccines for children is well underway. We're down to children as young as 12 now can get it. And that will continue. It will not stop. So as Democrats and as I would say reasonable people, shouldn't our policy be, okay, we make it available to all. We get it ourselves. I still wear masks. I want my granddaughter to wear a mask. And we protect ourselves and we offer the protection to everyone. If they choose not to get it, and by they, I mean anti-vaxxers, pro-Trump people, people who think this whole thing is a hoax, then as JP said, yes, it is on them. Why does that have to be a matter of policy if the general public, if most people are protected?
But you are for mandatory, right? We've talked about this before, Rosemary. So you're for mandatory. Everybody should have to get vaxxed.
Nope, I don't think so anymore.
You did.
I don't.
Yeah.
I think that, yes, I did, and that's because the state of vaccines is changing. There are no vaccines for children. So what Mike is saying for now is really true, but that could change tomorrow. Hell, there could be an announcement from the CDC this afternoon that Pfizer's safe for, you know, even five-year-olds. We don't know that. So when that happens, should it be mandatory in schools?
Am I insane? Because we still don't know whether the shot is good for how long, .. So my worry is as a paranoid disease hypochondriac person, that you, yes.
Why are you looking at me?
Rosemary, you go out into, and you wear your mask, and I agree with you entirely. I don't disagree with anything of what you said. But scientifically, we have not been told how long our shots last. And if this thing...
Aren't you,
go ahead. I mean, just if this thing blooms
ready,
in the fall.
Aren't you ready to go back in September for a booster? Fauci said early on that it may be as early as September.
I'm absolutely ready for a booster, but is it going to be the cluster blank that it was earlier, or is it going to be easier? And I don't know that answer. I would take a shot every week if I had a guarantee, but no one's telling me how long it's good for.
That's because they don't know.
Well, isn't that concerning?
Well, it is. But, I mean, the only way that you can absolutely determine how long this lasts is by looking at the original trial who got it last October and November, and they keep testing them. And as long as they're immune, they know, well, now it's been 12 months. Now it's been 18 months, you know, that kind of thing. And they can measure the deterioration of the immunity and then come up with a strategy against that. I mean, the science is working here. I'm not saying everybody should be strong-armed into getting the vaccine. I'm saying that the messaging that the vaccine is unnecessary and that it's hurtful and it's not safe is just false. It's we've got to get the right message out there.
Well, and we also, in my opinion, we also screwed up the messaging when we said, stupidly, I think, that, oh, well, we'll open stuff up. We'll take your word for it. And the fact, because there was that very brief window for like 2 days where if you wanted to partake in this, you had to get vaccinated. And we wouldn't let you into this unless you're vaccinated.
Right.
And now with all restrictions lifted, that isn't the case.
Well, I am looking at the positives, whereas I believe the other night at Madison Square Garden, the Foo Fighters had a sold out concert at Madison Square Garden.
Everyone had to be vaccinated.
They had approved vaccination.
Okay. I was at SPAC last week for a concert. There was no vaccination requirement. There was no masks.
But there was distancing, right?
There was some distancing, but not allegedly, like there was distancing 3 or 4 months ago. You know,
What did you see?
Trey Anastasio.
Oh, great. Cool.
Yes. Yeah. It was excellent.
Okay.
But we're in a place where I think that things are basically fully open. And there are no outbreaks in New York, right? And
not horrible, but there are.
What do you mean? There's no outbreaks.
Okay.
Outbreaks mean nobody's dying? Is that what you're saying, JP?
Outbreaks. People dying is different than an outbreak. You know, it used to be if there was a big gathering with people interacting, there would be a big COVID outbreak, and there wasn't.
I have a big issue with this. If 3 people die in a serious car accident, is it going to have news value?
Sure.
I didn't say no news value. I said no outbreak after a Foo Fighters concert where there's 40,000 people in a stadium together in an indoor space. That's a pretty big deal. We have come to a new place in terms of vaccinations, in terms of how much we're interacting. You go to the supermarket, people aren't wearing masks. And I believe that science, like John Stewart said, science has brought us to a place where we are much better than we were because of the thing that I think science brought us, which was the COVID disease.
I'm not sure. Yeah, okay. Let's talk about this when we come back. We're late for a break. My apologies to Mike Bowen. Sincere apologies. We'll be right back. Panel@WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is very nice to have you with us. We welcome you. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, JP Miller, and Mike Spain. It's our last call on the program, 34 minutes past 10 o'clock, and our last 15 minutes or so together. So let's go through some stories here that I wanted to get to that I think are important. Let's talk about for the first time, a active player in the NFL has come out as gay. He is the first active NFL player to announce that he is gay. Carl Nassib of the Las Vegas Raiders came out to the world yesterday, and it is historic. It is a turning stone. There certainly have been members of the NFL, past members of the NFL, who after their playing days have come out as gay. There was also one player who came out early on, Michael Sam, but then was cut from the team before he played. So, but this 28-year-old young man came out yesterday, and you wonder what impact this will have on sports and especially the NFL, and what that will mean for the league. As of yesterday and this morning, it only seems to be something that has been embraced by the NFL itself, by owners, by other players. So now, obviously, that may dissipate, but we look at that. I think we could and should look at that as a positive story. Rosemary, would you like to kick us off on this?
Sure, I'll kick us off. There's a certain very welcome ho hum about this. Okay, so he's dead. The stories of people coming out are very much like the stories that I remember from the 70s when, oh, look, there's a woman who's a bus driver. Oh, look, there's a woman who's a doctor. And yes, of course, all these things. I feel the same way people do. Of course, gay people are in every field of life. Your sexual orientation has nothing to do with your intelligence or your capability.
Rosemary, I can't hear you. I'm sorry. You're busting in and out. I don't know whether you can reconnect or maybe just give us a call back. Okay. Yeah, that's okay. All right. Mike, you were nodding, so I assume you're in agreement and can at least go along the same line that Rosemary was going to go along.
Echoing what Rosemary was saying, this is significant. And what I hope for and what people are expecting is after a while it'll be insignificant. It'll just be not even news that, that guy's gay. I mean, we saw it in the entertainment business. It's almost, if an actor is gay or lesbian, it doesn't even come up in the stories, but it might because it mentions their spouse, and who's also the same gender. And it should just be incidental as you're learning about somebody, but it's not even important to learn it in most cases. And this is making it's a breakthrough, I think. And the fact that Roger Goodell, the commissioner, basically applauded it and the team applauded it, and they say he's courageous and we hope to make this, not unusual.
Inclusive, yeah.
I mean, just think about how the NFL reacted to Colin Kaepernick when he took the knee to protest the way blacks were treated by police.
I was going
to
bring that up.
Yeah.
They were really crappy about it.
Yeah, they were really crappy about it, weren't they? And that has changed. It changed during Black Lives Matters where, Goodell
and didn't change for Colin Kaepernick.
No, it did not. No, but it takes courage on the part of people to pave the way for others so that it doesn't they can be accepted and that it's just not a big deal anymore. And I hope that this is a step in that direction.
JP?
I agree with Rosemary and Mike's sentiments that there is a welcome ho-hum about it. But I agree with that. But there also is a certain level of courage that it took for him to be the first to come out in a public way to do that in a place like the NFL. And so, I watched the video. I thought he did it in a really, really great way.
Really, every part of that messaging was brilliant, I thought. And
yeah.
I don't know, I don't know how planned that was or how, I don't know if there were professionals involved in that, but man, it was really good.
Mostly,
I agree.
Mostly, you're right. Mostly, the messaging was great because it didn't seem to be messaging.
Well, right. He came out very honestly and said, "This is something that I've been dealing with for the past 15 years of my life. I'm 28 years old, and I've known this about myself, and I have been basically tortured because I haven't been able to tell people, and now I'm telling you." And that is, you can't help but feel wonderful for the young man. And I believe this is what his third team in the NFL. So hopefully he will find great success it won't be the thing that leads the story about him when he excels in the sport.
But do we know? I mean, certainly this is a wonderful thing as far as I'm concerned. But do we know how many people, for example, in the Catholic Church now, the four of you were born Catholic, right?
No, you have to be baptized after you're born, but I understand what you're saying.
We were baptized early into the Catholic Church,
Now, has the Church changed its position on homosexuality?
No, the official stance of the Catholic Church is that it is an anomaly, and it's not regarded as healthy and normal. And that's painful to me as a Catholic, and I think it's painful to a lot of Catholics because there are many, many Catholics who are gay and lesbian, and there are many parishes around the country. The New York Times just did a whole story about the parishes in New York City that are welcoming and open to people of all types, and gays are welcome and lesbians are welcome, and they can bring their adopted children there, and they can
Church of St. Paul in New York City.
Right, that's right. That was St. Paul the Apostle, I remember, in Manhattan. And they come from all over. I mean, I think that it wouldn't be unusual to see the Catholic Church behind the shifts in society. It takes them a long time to get there. We don't have equality with women allowed to be priests, and there's other hierarchical situations that have pertained, you know, stayed for centuries, and yet. This Pope, Pope Francis, plays the long game.
He does.
He's putting people in key positions that will be there long after he's deceased, that will be making decisions for the future church. And probably long after I'm dead, there'll be, fully big changes in the church, but it just takes forever. And, you know, that's sad. You know?
I don't know. You may be waiting a long time, even well after you're dead. But
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, right.
Go ahead, Rosemary.
Not to be bashing the church, but I really feel the need to damp this praise of the Catholic Church as a progressive movement. Let us not forget that the official position is still that abortion is a grievous sin, that being gay is an anomaly. You said, I think they see it as far worse than that, but that being a pederastic priest is something that deserves compassion and like protection. It's a terrible position for the church to be in.
Shartok lit a fuse, huh? So I'll say
Who,
that
me?
I have been encouraged by Pope Francis's becoming more progressive on gay rights.
Yeah, but it's like a step forward, step back kind of thing. He'll do one thing that's good. Yeah, go ahead.
And I would also say that for the decade I was living in New York City, I was a member of a church run by a priest named Father John Dufell, which was on the Upper West Side. First, it was Ascension, and then Church of the Blessed Sacrament, and we had a very vibrant gay community in the church. They were many of the most active participants at church,
right,
as altar servers, as lectors. We had transgender members, and part of Father Dufell's
ministry
and messaging each week was that it is a church that welcomes gay people. And I understand that a lot of people say that's false, that they don't welcome gay people. But from the church that I was at the Upper West Side, I saw how strong and strengthened the Catholic Church can be by welcoming gay parishioners.
But don't, and Rosemary, I'm not saying this negatively, but don't you think, for all of the reasons we just mentioned, that is what makes this announcement not so ho-hum? Because it does take tremendous courage, especially in a sport that is so incredibly male-dominated.
Macho and filled with testosterone.
Go ahead.
I do not mean, when I say ho-hum, I did not mean to take away from him at all. It should be like, okay, big deal. Why does he even have to say it? That's what I meant. Not that, there are plenty of players who have been reprimanded for horrible anti-gay sentiments expressed aloud freely, and then they have to walk back and apologize for them. You know, I've never won a teammate who was gay, you know. Okay, well, so what? You got one. You probably have a whole lot more of them, just haven't come out. So, yeah, I think it's a really good step forward.
And you think of all of the things that the NFL, I know, I realize this is opening up a can of worms, much like Alan did a moment ago, but you know, given what the NFL lets players get away with in many cases,
and what they don't let them get away
like,
with.
Like murder.
Yeah. No, that guy was kicked out.
Eventually. Yeah, I mean, there. It does seem to be odd, but I'm very glad that they have at least taken the stand at that point. All right, we have some letters. We have 2 minutes, and we'll get to as many as we can. Adam says, hyper-masculinity does not preclude homosexuality. This scares some men in a culture that is systemically homophobic, hyper-masculinity being a traditional hiding place. Mary says, no outbreaks in New York. That's correct. There are no outbreaks in New York. Looking at the New York Times hotspot map, there are outbreaks in Missouri, Texas, Arkansas, and in a Georgia county. which name is Randolph. Thank you, Mary, for that information. Saul says, as pointed out by Slate magazine, everyone is going to be vaccinated either by safe vaccine or by the virus. Now, long haul, COVID is happening at a 25% rate. The long haul symptoms are bad, including irreversible brain, lung, and heart problems. This needs to be publicized. Benjamin writes, Republican opposition to things like masks, vaccines, Dr. Fauci, and all things medically sensible is truly pathological, but after spending time in the Berkshires, the only anti-vaxxers I've yet to meet are the crunchy granola hippie types. Liberals need to...
I know that guy.
Like, who needs vaccine, man?
Liberals need to check in on their weird family members as well.
Well, no, there are... I live in the Berkshires, and of course, I go to cocktail parties, and there's always one guy at that cocktail party. When I see him across the room, I run out the door.
Yeah. Ellen said, should those choosing not to get vaccinated pay higher health insurance premiums on higher life insurance premiums? I'll let that question hang. Jim says, I think we missed the reality by calling this a flu. We should have called this gas lung or some other name. The flu is not treating and does not give meaning to the reality of this disease. Well, that was the flu was... That was on Trump, right? I mean, that was what he said.
It
was
flu.
Just like the flu. Elias says, this is going back to Cuomo. Prococo bribed contractors to fill his personal bank account. Rosemary should know that Cuomo had nothing to do with the scams, and her statement that Prococo covered for him is false. Every contractor involved gave full testimony about the scamming and all said Cuomo had nothing to do with it. All monies ended up in Prococo's hands. Rosemary or Mayo, please respond.
I don't believe I made a statement. I was asking for clarification on what we were saying about why the Cuomo family giving money to the legal defense for Prococo was such a bad story for Cuomo.
Okay.
And he didn't know anything about it, so.
Yeah, he said he didn't know anything about it.
And we also said that, so you can believe it or not as you want. You know, he said he didn't do anything to those women, too.
All right. Let's go. We're out of time. I want to thank everybody for being with us. Rosemary, thank you for being here via telephone. Are you back tomorrow? Will you be in tomorrow?
I will be in tomorrow, yes.
Fantastic. We'll see you then. Alan, thank you very much, as always. Mike Spain, JP Miller, thank you. We'll be back right after this.